Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
Hey, what's going on? Welcome to the Raptors Reasonless Podcast. I'm your host, Blake Murphy. Joining me on the line, Big Afro accompanying him, Eric Kareem. What's up, man?
It's a pretty big week for me.
Passover.
Passover, yes. Interrupted by Drake. Fire alarms going off while I'm trying to ask Masai Ujiri a question as he's throwing me shade about my hair. But, you know, life carries on. How are you?
Yeah, I'm all right. I mean, I've minimized the amount I'm asking questions on Zoom because most of the time at this point I'm in a tank top crushing beers because this team is so depressing. you know, it's real piece of garbage hours over here. I have a hat on, even though I'm just sitting at my desk, and I've come to the realization this week that despite playing hockey my entire life, I only now, for the first time ever, have hockey hair where, like, it's curling out from underneath my hat.
Oh, I've got a lot of that going on, yeah.
Yeah, we're going to do a lot of reader questions today, or listener questions, I guess. Yeah. And Bruce Arthur doesn't listen to this podcast, but he asked for an Afro.
Yeah, I did see that, yeah. We'll get to it when we get to it.
Do you want to give him one? No, just do it right now.
Yeah. So it's still going on. There's a lot of it, a lot of hair. I did shave, yes, not completely shave, but I, you know, set the razor to stubble, basically. But yeah, after the game last night, I sort of went full Will Ferrell from Zoolander and parted my hair. Mugatu, I believe his name was in Zoolander. And so, like, it was like fro-y at the sides, but then like thin at the, you know, in the middle at the top. It was bad, but it got my wife to laugh. So, you know, the things we do for matrimony.
I have no idea about that, Eric. It's we are 13 months into a pandemic, and not only is it real piece of garbage hours over here, you know, you have the benefit of living with your lovely wife and cat and dog. Some of us are going crazy because we don't get to see people because or interact with anyone.
Yeah, most of our interaction is our Twitter replies. Is that a bad thing?
Yes. Yes, I feel like, I mean, look, of all the seasons for the Raptors to be bad and have bad luck and kind of punt it, you know, the one where they're not in Toronto makes the most sense. However, for our mental health and the mental health of the fan base online, I think it's the worst possible time because no one has anything to do except for watch sports and complain on Twitter. And everyone's losing it. Like, I saw people, this is not about the Raptors, and WrestleMania Reasonableists is still a little further away, but did you see that Orange Cassidy is now coming out to Pixies? Like, AEW?
Yeah, I did hear about that, yeah, Where Is My Mind?
Yeah, and it's an awesome song and an awesome choice. And I saw wrestling fans complaining online that it doesn't have high enough energy and, like, it doesn't make sense as an entrance song. But it's Orange Cassidy. That's the entire point of the guy, is that there's no energy and pomp and stuff to it. Anyway, everyone's losing their minds, especially around the Toronto Raptors, because the Toronto Raptors are quite bad. They're 18-29 now. They've lost a million games in a row or something like that. Going back to March, actually this entire month. So they beat the Houston Rockets on February 26th. In the time since then, they are 1-12. And if you want to get down into the splits, they are 0-12 when there are men on the broadcast.
And I do. You know, Kyle Lowry did shout them out in that game, the all-women broadcast, which was awesome, by the way. Everybody did an awesome job, but we'd expect no less. They're very good at their jobs.
Yeah, Megan McPeak pointed out to me that the team hasn't won in a month except when Megan's on play-by-play.
Yeah, which I guess means they should maybe try calling somebody up from the Capital City Go-Go, who I guess don't exist right now.
Well, they didn't play this year, yeah.
Yeah. Anywhom, yeah, they're bad. What was the actual question?
There wasn't a question yet. I was just
yeah, oh, Kyle Lowry. Yeah, Kyle Lowry did say maybe they brought us the luck and energy we needed. So I know they pay Matt Devlin good money, but for the good of the franchise... Well, we could get into what's for the good of the franchise later. I think there will probably be some questions that cover that.
Yeah, we're gonna be listener question heavy on this one. Off the top, you know, as usual, the reminder that you can go to theathletic.com/we the six and get a subscription to the written side of The Athletic for $1 a month right now, or you can click off any of mine and Eric's articles. Yes, we understand it's not the rosiest of time around the Raptors, but we think we're doing okay work around that, especially trade deadline stuff. You know, I broke down the Powell for Trent and Hood trade and did a piece on where things stand cap-wise and roster-wise moving forward. I did a little goodbye to Norman Powell on the weekend. Eric, you columned up about what the non-Lowry trade means, which we have a lot of questions about that we'll get into. And you also wrote off of Masai's availability. So again, theathletic.com/we the six, or click off any of our articles. As a refresher for the deadline, the Raptors did trade Norman Powell to the Portland Trailblazers for Gary Trent Jr. and Rodney Hood. They then traded Terrence Davis and Matt Thomas to Sacramento and Utah, respectively, for 2021 second-round picks that project to fall in the 40s. You know, the norm for... We haven't done a podcast since the deadline, so just to very refresh quickly, the norm for Gary Trent and Rodney Hood trade... First of all, Rodney Hood has looked pretty good. He was only in that trade for salary cap matching purposes. Like, the Raptors will find some value in his $10.9 million non-guaranteed deal for next year, the same way they gave Boucher and Baines and Bembry and Watson non-guaranteed deals for next year. It's some nice flexibility. But really, this was about Norm for Trent. And Norman Powell is the better player right now, but he's 6 years older than Gary Trent Jr. He's an unrestricted free agent, where Gary Trent is a restricted free agent, and Norm figures to be an order of magnitude more expensive over the next couple years. Also,
not to mention cap holds,
which is what I was going to say next. Yeah,
I just wanted people to know that I too know a thing about the CBA.
All the great coverage at theathletic.com/6.
Yeah.
I mean, the Davis and Thomas for seconds trades, people thought that signaled the Raptors were clearing roster spots for a Kyle Lowry trade, and they may have been, but they also turned two guys who were out of the rotation and didn't figure into the future plans anymore into mid-seconds in what could be a pretty good draft. They didn't have a second for this year. They haven't had... You know, I wrote about heading into the deadline that they've traded three firsts and six seconds over the last 4 years. If you can turn two non-rotation pieces into some picks to restock that cupboard, whether as trade assets or whether to kind of restock the 905 and get that prospect pipeline going again, that's worthwhile. And we know, too, that two picks in the 40s can generally move you up into the 30s. So maybe you can, you know, basically steal a second first-round pick with or a late early second or something like that. Anyway, nobody really cares about those deals. The big deal is Norm for Gary Trent, which is, you know, again, it's about youth. It's about cost. It's about finding a guy who maybe has upside that can push the core a little higher. And it's about money, unfortunately. Those things matter. But the bigger thing is, the biggest thing from the trade deadline is that the Raptors didn't trade Kyle Lowry. And, you know, we went into a lot of reasons for and against trading Kyle Lowry into the deadline. And the issue that people seem to be having most, you know, there are some people who thought basically you should have traded him for anything at all, which I don't really agree with. But the one that I understand the frustration with a little bit more is you dealt Norman Powell in a future-oriented move. You dealt two back-end rotation pieces in a future-oriented move. And then you kept Kyle Lowry. And there's at least a little bit of incongruence there. Eric, where to kind of put a cap on the deadline for us, how do you feel about the Raptors not trading Kyle Lowry? And how do you feel about them not trading Kyle Lowry and now having to play out the rest of the season in this kind of directional limbo?
Well, what you just mentioned, how you framed the totality of the moves, is sort of what I wrote about off Masai's press conference. I think people can sort of rightly see it as a bit of a half measure for all the Breaking Bad fans out there who love any time any part of that show is referenced. And I get that, but I think as we discussed a lot, the Norm Powell negotiations and the Kyle Lowry negotiations kind of exist in a vacuum from one another. They're not the same thing. Kyle Lowry's market was very specific, was limited to teams who, you know, Kyle had to want to go to, first of all, or have some interest in playing for, which I think is the right thing to do. Anybody calling for Masai Ujiri to be as cold as possible with Kyle Lowry, I mean, at some point you got to ask yourself, what's the point of watching sports if you're not going to care about these guys at all? It was limited to teams that can cobble together $30 million to trade back to the Raptors, most of which would probably, the Raptors would want to be expiring contracts. And it was limited to teams that had pieces that were interesting to the Raptors. Whereas Norm Powell, a lot easier to move, a lot simpler of a decision, and a lot more teams who could have theoretical interest for him, not only for his talent right now, but his bird rights, which increasingly matter, because I think of all the, you know, first of all, the class of 2021 free agency isn't going to be as good as we once thought. That's obvious. We remember all the guys who signed extensions. And bird rights are going to matter a lot, and it's going to allow a competitive team like Portland, who are in that situation, to go over the cap to retain some top-level talent. And they're a team that wouldn't have been able to go out into the market and really do any damage. So I'm fine with sort of the dissonance between the moves they made and the move they didn't. But it's a complicated one, right? Like Kyle Lowry, with, you could see why they didn't make the Lakers trade, for example, if they weren't offering Horton Tucker. Like getting back KCP and, you know, expirings, and what was, like, were they even offering a potential, like any sort of piece with potential? I don't think so.
No, reports? Not according to the reports that we have. Basically, the Lakers deal amounted to, you're just doing Marc Gasol and LeBron a huge favor.
Yeah, and you'll be worse this year probably, except if you listen to some comment or some people on Twitter.
I mean, Schroeder's pretty good, so you might be neutral, but...
Anyway, so if they didn't throw in Horton Tucker, I don't make that trade. The Heat one becomes a bit more complicated if Duncan Robinson was truly on the table.
But then who knows if that got pulled off the table anyway, because the Rockets came in and gave them Victor Oladipo for free.
Yeah, well, that seems like it was always their backstop.
Which is hard to negotiate against.
Yeah, and then that leaves Philly. Now, what do we know about the Philly offer? Not much. I think, like, at the end of the day, if they really... we know they traded for George Hill, which may or may not have decreased the Philly offer. If there was a maxi and, you know, first round-based offer in which you're not taking any more salary on, you know, I would have been probably, at that point, compelled to do it, even though it's not a hell of a return for him. But you're also not without options going forward with Lowry. It could just be a thing where you get a trade exception in a sign-and-trade in the offseason, or it could be a matter where you re-sign him and we can do this whole dance again next year. So I don't hate it. I understand the people who are like, oh, well, what does this mean about the future? Where are they for right now? There is a bit of, you know, even though I understand the dissonance, like, there is dissonance and it's difficult to navigate, but I really think, you know, long story, very long story, unfortunately, story, long story short, you have to view the negotiations with Lowry as separate from the rest of what happened.
Which is fair. And the other thing to consider with the Philly thing, too, is like, I mean, look, Daryl Morey's quote and Masai Ujiri's quote seemed kind of directed at each other a little bit. So I think there was maybe a disagreement on Lowry's exact value to Philly, especially when considering things like luxury tax and stuff. But from talking to other Philly writers, the other thing too is that, you know, it's not like from the Raptors' perspective, yes, you're getting... You know, if it was Maxey in a first, I'd probably pull the trigger on that. But from Philly's perspective, to make the salary math work, it's Maxey and a first and Danny Green and one more player to make the math work. And Danny Green's been pretty good of late. And, you know, you look ahead to some of their playoff opponents and maybe he's valuable. So I still think they're going to regret not trading for Kyle Lowry, whatever the deal framework was. But you can at least see how there could be a difference in opinion.
Reasonable people can disagree.
Yeah. I do think in this case, reasonable Daryl Morey, a big fan of yours, Eric Green, is going to regret it. Like, I think Philly is the only team in the East that has a real chance, barring injury, to beat Brooklyn. And I think going only partway in, when you have two stars kind of in the early part of their prime, one of whom's had a lot of injury trouble, you know, I understand what Morey's saying about you want to maximize the total championship probability over a multi-year window, but that's not how basketball works, really. Like that doesn't factor in injuries. And, you know, I'm more of the mind that once you hit a certain level, and this is Daryl Morey's thinking back to his 5% rule kind of thing, like you want to maximize the one biggest peak on that kind of probability curve. So I think Philly will regret it a little bit. I think maybe Toronto will too if the sign and trade market ends up pretty empty and Lowry leaves for just a trade exception or whatever.
Nothing.
Yeah, I mean, look, trade exceptions are useful. But yeah, look, on the bright side, for those of you who wanted a full teardown, it does not look like Kyle Lowry or anyone else on the Raptors is going to prevent them from losing a lot of games. So things are bad. They are 1-12 in this last 13-game stretch. They have one game left in March, and they could conceivably go 1-13. Producer Andrew said before we came on that he doesn't know if the Raptors can handle Poku, and that's a real question. Shea's out. Lou Dort is probably out. Al Horford is now sitting out. So it's not a very good Thunder team, but it's not a very good Raptors team. This could potentially be the third worst month in franchise history. They have previously gone 1-14 in November of 1997 and 1-15 in November of 2005. This would be a 1-13 month. However, they could salvage it with a 2-12 month. That would only be like the fourth worst month. So, you know, huge salvage potential here on Wednesday. I don't think we need to go too much into that 1-12 stretch. I think everyone's aware of what the issues are. Everyone's aware they don't have a center. Everyone's aware that they keep losing players to COVID and health and safety protocols. And Pascal Siakam lost 15 pounds. And the only two bench guys who were playing well are now unavailable to them. And, you know, Stanley Johnson and Yuta and those guys just aren't sixth, seventh man caliber guys yet.
You leave Yuta out of this.
Look, I thought he looked fine yesterday, but
He was actively useful yesterday in what must be called absolute flaming garbage time.
I don't know, man. Davidas Servetus didn't get the play, so it could have been that garbage.
I mean, and don't get me wrong, like, nobody cares about this argument. Well, some people might. Like, I think he should be in the rotation right now.
Yeah, I mean, they only have 11 guys, and the Stanley Johnson experiment should be probably done. I like Stanley as a person. I like the story he's had this year, turning himself into a bit of a rotation player. But, like, it's too much. He's not good. He's helped, like, stealth tank is not a thing. But if it were, Stanley Johnson continuing to play, like, 20 minutes a game would be a
If you want to look at net ratings on this team on off splits, like, his is basically where Aaron Baines is. And, I mean, those have a large degree of, well, who was healthy while the good players were out. He hasn't been good. And anytime he tries to create off the dribble, it usually ends spectacularly poorly. And like, these are decisions, as I wrote in my story off the Pistons loss, like, you have to sort of come to a conclusion about Yuta as he, you know, at the end of a two-way contract. You want to see a bit more of what Jalen Harris can do, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, Jalen Harris, who's hurt right now, by the way, but right hip injury.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
And that's the other thing, is like, it's kind of frustrating from a, I mean, you know how fond I am of like tracking the development of guys in the 905 and stuff. And like, when they were really shorthanded before, Malachi Flynn was a part of those health and safety protocols. And now that they're really thin again, Paul Watson and Jalen Harris, two of the guys you might want to get a look at, are both out also. So it's been frustrating. Okay, so the Raptors are now 18-29. They're still somehow 11th in the Eastern Conference. They are two games out of a play-in game. They are 5.5 out of the sixth seed, which would avoid a play-in game. And they are only, what have we got here? They're only 7 games out of the bottom of the league, and more meaningfully, 2.5 games out of having top 4 lottery odds. So all that is to say, you know, it's too early with 25 or so games to go to be looking at that stuff too closely. But they are as close to being a true top of the lottery team as they are to being a play-in team. And they are as close to being bottom of the table as they are to avoiding the play-in game altogether with a playoff spot. So, Eric, I guess before we get into the questions here, just what is, I don't want to be too nihilistic and ask what is the point, but what is,
you never want to ask me that question.
What is the benchmark against which we measure the Raptors the rest of the way? Like, I know that they'll keep talking about for at least another 10 or 12 games that they want to get in the playoff mix and make some noise and stuff. And I do think, you know, playoff rotation with their top, with the 5 guys that they start, you know, could be solid. But, like, they're not they're not beating Philly or Brooklyn, and they're probably not beating Milwaukee, and they're, you know, maybe they, I mean, they're just not going to get a Charlotte or New York or Atlanta. Like Philly and Brooklyn are the clear 1-2. So if you win a play-in, you're getting one of them, or maybe Milwaukee, and you're just not doing anything with that. So what are we looking for these last 25 games?
I'm going to get into this more in an article probably next week, but I think you want to track individual growth, and as much as anything, you want to see Pascal Siakam like actually string. And before last night against Detroit, he was, you know, looking pretty good ever since the Nick Nurse altercation or whatever you want to call it. So you want to see your main guys take either steps forward or stabilize their play. I mean, I think Fred VanVleet's play, well, I mean, there will be continuing questions about his shot selection and where he can, you know, where he's efficient and where he's not. I think just the, you know, the plus minus numbers bear it out, and, you know, just the total minutes numbers bear it out, how hard the guy is playing and how much of a difference he is making. Like, he's not there yet, but he is becoming like a Kyle Lowry difference maker. He's approaching that status, I should say, right in front of our eyes, I think. It just happens to be for a much worse team right now. But you want to see, you know, we've seen a bit of OG developing an in-between game. He pulled up, you know, in front of Mason Plumlee last night to hit the free throw line jumper. And you want to see him continue to flash that and just flash more on drives. His defense has been awesome lately. I'm speaking more of when he's been able to go out on the wings and defend, as opposed to like banking against a center, which he's done an admirable job of. But you know, his defense at the end of the Phoenix games, and I thought the Portland games, were both just tremendous. And then beyond that, you're looking for Gary Trent to sort of find his niche within what the Raptors do, and you saw a bit more of that against Detroit. And you'd like to, you know, them to pull some wins out so the team as a whole cannot go into what's going to be a longer offseason than they're all used to between the last 2 years, feeling like garbage. One of my big pieces of advice for fans right now is just to not look at the standings either way. Don't look at the reverse standings. Don't look at the actual standings. It can only stress you out, I think. I think you really have to get micro on this. You have to zero in. And some of it does coalesce into the bigger picture. I mean, it all coalesces into the bigger picture. And if some of the things you want to see happen on a regular basis, they're going to win. And you don't want to be in a position where you're rooting against your team. I've covered seasons like that. Trust me, they're not fun. And that is probably where this season is going, I would have to imagine. But I think mostly you're rooting for the guys you know are going to be around for a while. And the results are definitely second to me, they seem secondary right now.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, right? As you look at who is potentially going to be a part of this team when it's not a dumb, stupid, wasted year, and that's kind of where you want to focus things. So
I just want to add, like, I do think there's danger in just chalking it up to the COVID and Tampa of it all. And I think that will be important for a Raptors front office to do. Like, I don't think you can just, you know, wipe away the season as this happened because of this.
Well, yeah, I mean,
that's not who we are, but
right. Cause it's two things, right? It's like the season has had all those complicating factors, and that's made it hard to win with only five good players. But if you had more than five good players. You might have been able to withstand it a little more. Maybe you don't. Maybe you still get wiped out. But the fact that, like, even when healthy, this team has had long stretches of poor play is not great.
Yeah, at this point, the good stretch of play is the aberration, not the right. bad stretches of play. So it will be on the Raptors to try and accurately factor in every, and this is a once in a lifetime season, we hope. So it's going to be hard, but they've got to look very closely at all the factors and not just say Pascal Siakam and Fred VanVleet and OG Anunoby are, you know, great players who have contributed to championship teams before. I mean, I guess not in Ananobi's case, but, you know, lots of reason to think he's very good. I'm not saying lose faith in those guys, but you have to take a serious long look at the framework of what you've built and not just say Tampa, COVID, we're fine.
Yeah, I would agree with that. So, Eric, we have, I mean, the people have takes. That's not surprising. Do you want to start goofy? Do you want to start serious? Do you want me to just go in order? What do you want me to do here? I got a lot of questions for you over these next 20 minutes.
Okay, let's start serious and get dumb as we go along. I think sure. that's maybe the best way to retain listeners.
Sure.
Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they need a light break right now. Yeah.
Okay, the first one comes from Luca 11, and this is kind of, it follows the kind of what you were just talking about, but it's more of a, instead of a what should we expect, do you think the Raptors still can make a push to move up the standings?
I think it's possible. How many more back-to-backs do they have? Because that guarantees X number of losses, apparently.
I mean, look, they had fewer in the second half than any other team, I think, so...
Yeah.
We got to stop using that as a...
Yeah. I mean, they've lost to some bad teams. They tend to compete better against good teams, but still lose. I think it's possible just because there are uninspiring teams ahead of them, but they have at least 7 really tough games left, and I'm sure more in the middle range after that. So, possible. I think getting into the top 6 is probably not going to... I mean, I would bet money against that happening. Into the play-in tournament, certainly possible, although, you know, I think it's more likely they go down than they go up.
All right, and then this follows from a couple bots. What would you prefer? Would you prefer things to click and they win and get into the play-in and make the first round and we have some positive stuff to write about before we go on forced vacation? Or would you rather they continue to lose and up the lottery odds and you know, go future-oriented or whatever?
Yeah, I think, you know, as I just talked about for a while, it's more complicated than that. I think ultimately, like, good individual performances in losses is probably ideal, but that's not one of the options. So I guess all things being equal, a higher pick is probably better at this stage.
Yeah, I think so. ASP asks about some draft prospects. I think I'm just gonna pocket that one. Like, this is, depending on who you ask, I think it's a top 2, a 3-6, and then like an interesting 7-15 that you can order a lot of different ways.
So are you now saying the Raptors will get 7th pick? Because that's what it sounds like to me.
Yeah, I mean, look, this, are they going to get Terrence Ross again? Probably. Is that the future of Keon Johnson? Probably. No, there are some guys in that range that I like. Like, if they got, the tough thing I think is after number 6, I think what you're looking at is guys who could really make a difference in time, but need some, like, they're going to require some patience and maybe some G League time. And I know that fans, even with all the success that the G League program has had, you know, around the league, fans still seem to love the idea of, you know, the number 7 pick going to the G League instead of contributing right away. But that's the reality of the draft and rookies, is that not everyone is Luka Doncic or you know, Cade Cunningham. Like, some guys like Kai Jones or, you know, Moses Moody. Like, some of those guys are going to need a little bit of time. So,
the yeah, Raptors, anyway, by the way, do have the 7th worst record in the league right now.
They sure do. all right. This one comes from Justin Fisher. might require a bit of a lengthy answer, but Eric, what's your favorite thing about Blake?
Oh, yeah, I did see that question. I mean, professionally, it's his work ethic. He's an encyclopedia, and the amount of stuff he knows offhand or can figure out very quickly is staggering. But I think my favorite thing about Blake is just what a sincere person he is, and what a fundamentally decent human he is.
Aww. Thanks, man. Okay. This one, this is interesting. Again, this is draft stuff, so maybe we can save these kind of questions bigger. But so I'll rephrase this. This comes from a fake Nick Nurse burner account, but it's a real question. If you luck into the top pick and get Cade Cunningham, do you then find even more value in keeping Lowry as a sort of mentor, rather than sign and trading him to maybe make the team better?
No.
Okay.
I don't think so. I think you have Fred VanVleet. Like, I wouldn't be against keeping Lowry in that scenario, but I don't think he suddenly becomes way more important to what you're trying to do.
Okay, there are a couple questions, so apologies to not saying the specific person, because a bunch of you asked the same kind of thing, and it's basically, was there a failure of the front office to not add a center at the deadline, or was that intentional once they decided they weren't going in? And then some frustration over the buyout center market. I'm just going to start with the buyout center market. First of all, the buyout market has generally tended to be pretty overrated and overstated. But also, like, the Raptors are a million games under 500, playing every game on the road. If you, like, there's just, yeah, you can offer playing time, but what buyout guy is signing with a team near the bottom of the table? Like, it just, I don't think it reflects anything other than that the Raptors have been bad this year. It was only 2 years ago that Marc Gasol waived a big trade kicker to come to Toronto, and as much as it didn't turn out, Jeremy Lin was the top buyout guy on that year's buyout market, and people were excited about it. It's not that big a deal. Like, I don't think it reflects a lot other than that the type of guy who's getting bought out doesn't want to go to a losing situation. So, but Eric, the failure to address the center position, is it a failure? Is, you know, we both thought Baines was a fine plan C. Is them not doing anything at the trade deadline just kind of waving the white flag on that?
Maybe a little bit. I mean, I think the real failure happened probably a few weeks before the trade deadline, when you maybe could have got somebody for a more reasonable price. It's been clear for a while that Baines isn't the answer. And if you were trying to give, you know, I think the most interesting, or one of the more interesting quotes Masai gave was talking about how he thought this group deserved a real chance to try and compete together. That's like before the Norm trade. And now they're going in, you know, a slightly different direction. Well, if you're trying to give that group a chance, it was sort of beholden on you to, I don't think that's the right use of beholden, but you needed to make adjustments when it's clear something wasn't working. And obviously it takes two teams to make a trade, but yeah, definitely a failure by the trade deadline. I mean, I don't really know where their heads were at, but you know, I don't think they, quite rightly, they didn't want to give up a future asset to help a roster that they just made worse by trading the one player who can get to the rim and score efficiently once there. So, yeah, we just talked about the value of second round picks and having your first round picks. And so, yeah, that's pretty much where I stand on that.
Yep, that is fair. That's fair.
Overall, I think they obviously screwed up. I think, you know, they were wrong, but I'm not at the deadline, like deadline week, I'm not that mad that they didn't trade for somebody.
Looking forward a little bit, Kate asks, do you go after Holmes or Jared Allen as an offseason target? I think everyone knows how I feel about Rashawn Holmes at this point. Friend of the podcast, Brian Schroeder, referred to Kai Jones as what if Rashawn Holmes could dribble, and that's kind of why I'm in on him as a mid-lottery pick. But yeah, Holmes would be great. Sacramento, by acquiring DeLon Wright, made their own cap situation like a little bit more complicated to where maybe you can poach Holmes if you're willing to go over the mid-level for him. Jared Allen, I think, is out. Like Cleveland,
I don't think he's gettable. Yeah.
Yeah, like by all accounts, Cleveland acquired him with the intention of him being their long-term center. So they gave up picks. They ate salary to get him. I'd imagine that gets taken care of pretty quickly. John Collins would be the other interesting RFA big, whether or not you consider him a center. He has he's gotten pretty good and pretty cool. Eric, you mentioned the loss of Norman Powell changing the dynamic in terms of the Raptors' ability to get to the rim and get into the paint. You also mentioned Fred VanVleet's growth kind of impacting games this year and until the last couple weeks as a pick-and-roll playmaker as well. We got a couple questions about Fred's... one person framed it as an allergy to passing, which I don't think is fair at all. But there seems to be some sense that Fred isn't being held accountable. He has not had the best shooting stretch since returning. He's shooting 37.7% overall and 34% on over 10 threes a game in the 8 games since coming back from his health and safety related absence. Also averaging only 4.5 assists in that span, including 4 of the last 5 games with 3 assists or fewer. The offensive ecosystem without Norman Powell to pressure the rim and without, I mean, just capable bench offensive weapons other than, I guess, Rodney Hood, and Chris Boucher's been struggling of late too. How much of this do you put on VanVleet? And how much of this is a guy trying to make something happen in an offensive environment where, you know, maybe if he's passing to someone, there's aren't, like, I don't want to waive all accountability for VanVleet because he hasn't been, you know, as sharp as he was earlier in the year. But I mean, are you putting a lot of blame on VanVleet for the shaky offense of late, or is that more a symptom of, you know, five guys on the floor?
I think the fact that you needed to put like 8 caveats in there sort of is the answer to the question. He deserves some of the blame, and overall there has not been enough ball movement and next action playmaking, I think. That's not all on VanVleet, certainly. That's on, you know, not having high-end talent who can both, you know, who can shoot, pass, and dribble, all of them. You need those things to play that way. So I have a tough time blaming the guy who's playing 41 minutes a night after having COVID. Saying that, like, there are roster construction. The roster construction isn't ideal right now. I don't know what people want. I don't think like Siakam's been like way better with his decision making either. And he did have some nice passes over the last few games for sure. VanVleet is always going to be a bit limited with his size in terms of seeing the floor once he gets in there. Kyle Lowry obviously figured out how to do that throughout his career, and it's a next step that VanVleet has to take, and you get that through more reps as the lead guy, and hopefully it is, you know, an area of growth for VanVleet in the future. But I'm definitely putting it more on what's going on around him than what's, you know, than the DNA of the player.
Fair. A couple more draft ones, just quick hitters that I want to address because they're going to come up a lot. Omer asks, should the Raptors be thinking about drafting best talent or best fit to complement the core roster? I will always, always, always say best talent. Rosters change quickly. Rookies don't make an impact out of the gate. We all thought DeLon Wright at number 20 was going to be a rotation guy out of the out of the gate since he was a senior and everything. Then they went and signed Corey Joseph. Always, always take the best talent and worry about fit later. I feel like that a lot in general about roster construction, but especially in the draft where you're looking at a multi-year window where a lot can change really quickly. Mark Noseworthy also asks, which lottery simulator have you been using the most? While I appreciate Tankathon as a site and a project, I will never, ever understand lottery simulation because it's just like...
It's a lottery.
It's just probability. Like, I know 0.14 of the time, this is going to be the... Oh, anyway, we don't need to get into that. Where do we go from here? All right. I'm trying to balance negativity and actual questions and stuff. Okay, Kyle Lowry Stays asks, what's the projection for Gary Trent's contract and role moving forward? Obviously, it's a little early, and some of that depends on how he looks down the stretch here, but did you get the impression from Masai, Eric, that Gary Trent is now someone we can list as part of the core along with OG Fred and Pascal?
I obviously think Gary Trent is one of the most interesting players to watch for the rest of the season for all of these reasons. Like, you want to see how he fits with your guys. And because as of now, he's more of a secondary piece than a part of, you know, what's going to drive how you play. You want to see how he performs in that role. Saying that, like, I think Masai, Kyle Lowry trade notwithstanding, has a long history of retaining restricted free agents or locking them up before they get to restricted free agency. So I would expect him to be around, you know, in the intermediate term for sure. I don't think there are a lot of teams that are going to have cap room. Some of them are not very good, but I'm not, you know, I'm without having done a deep dive into those teams, I don't think any team is coming to like blow the doors down with a Gary Trent offer. I think the most he could have been offered by Portland before the year was like the prorated norm contract, which was like 4 and 53 or something like that. Not prorated, but you know,
yes, adjusted inflation to the current adjusted
cap. Yes. So if it ends up being a bit higher than that, I wouldn't be surprised, but I wouldn't expect it to go much higher than that.
I'd be surprised if he gets more than 15 a year.
Yeah.
Unless he just, like, has another Gary Trent bubble performance down the stretch here.
It would be interesting if he just accepted the qualifying offer, but we always say that, and guys very rarely do that, so.
Yeah. All right. This one's from Brian. If a Canadian city was not an option, what U.S. city would you have picked instead of Tampa to host the Raptors this season?
San Diego.
Ooh, that's a good...
It would have been terrible for me personally, because unless they were playing afternoon games, but San Diego.
I mean, Seattle's... we could have just shipped you out there.
At least moved me to Vancouver so I could be on the same time zone.
I wouldn't do that to you. I wouldn't send you to that garbage place.
Garbage. Yeah, I mean, San Diego is just... I've been there a few times. It's just a great place to hang out and be outside, even during the pandemic, I imagine.
That's not bad. My answer, Carroll, Iowa.
Austin?
Did you just get the alert on your phone for the meeting that we have coming up? Is that what that noise was?
That was 10 minutes.
All right. Well, we should wrap this up. One more question from Jessica Jade. Is there any chance at all, a lot of caps in this tweet, that the Raptors will actually get a serviceable center this season? I'm going to say no, but they do have two open roster spots, and we got a couple questions about what the plans, you know, B through Z are. Certainly doesn't sound like Kelly Olynyk is getting bought out in Houston.
I can't believe Tillman, Fertitta?
Yeah.
Doesn't want to save money somehow.
Yeah, but Kelly's good, and he's a good vet mentor, and having his rights in the summer is helpful. So I will say no, but I mean, there's Dante Hall they could take another look at, who didn't really get a fair shake. Nick Nurse spoke highly of Henry Ellenson. The Nets should let Alize Johnson come back to Toronto. Freddie Gillespie is like kind of a 6'9 center type that was really good in the G League and stood out. If you're looking for, I got asked about a quad A type specifically the other day, and like Jordan Bell, who hasn't been good in the NBA, was really good in the G League bubbles. So a few guys like that you could kind of kick the tires on, but I don't think there's anyone that Raptors fans are going to get super, super
excited. I believe the question was serviceable. The word serviceable was mentioned. And I would just say helping your team lose might not, I think we can call that a service at this stage.
Yeah. All right, Eric. We are at the end of the podcast. The pity party mailbag is
thanks,
over.
Thanks, Perd.
Yeah, the pity party mailbag is over. I think we're not going to talk to the people until Wednesday next week because the Raptors have a Monday, Tuesday back-to-back, which is a first. Looking ahead, they play at Oklahoma City on Wednesday. Then they get the Warriors, the Wizards, and the Lakers. Eric, are you going to go LLLL to play it safe here?
I should probably start doing that, although I was very close to... I mean, I wasn't very close because they got killed last night, but I had a perfect week going until then. I'm going to go win, loss, loss, win. The Lakers are barely a team right now, and neither LeBron nor Anthony Davis will be playing in that game. And as you mentioned, Oklahoma City doesn't have a lot of players. Are the Lakers on the back-to-back?
Yes, for the Raptors. I don't know if the Lakers
play. Yeah. Okay, never mind. Win, loss, loss, loss.
All right. Optimism, baby. Okay. So as negative as the tone is right now, we got to like 5 of the like 40 questions that we had. So obviously there is still a lot to talk about and digest and figure out with this team, which is why I would urge you to go to theathletic.com/we the six or click on any of mine and Eric's articles. If you are not yet a subscriber, you can get a subscription for $1 a month. There's going to be a lot. There's a lot to sort through right now. There's a lot to sort through with Masai and the future of the franchise and Kyle Lowry and the draft ahead and Gary Trent Jr.'s free agency. I think we'll be able to continue doing good work and contextualizing all that stuff and having our voice squeak at the end of the podcast and maybe some fun feature work around all that stuff too. So please stick with us. Please keep listening. Please keep reading. It's been a while since things were this dour around the Raptors, but we'll help you through it.
Just right. Look forward to game one in Toronto in front of some fans. It's going to be a scene.
Yeah. All right, Eric, thank you so much, man.
Thanks, Blake. See ya.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a 1-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a 1-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a 1-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.